we feature a song by a local artist. So please join us for Noon Tunes Monday through Friday, 12:20 p.m., right here on WGTD HD.
Welcome to Generation Now. I'm Troy McDonald. With over 8 million views on YouTube, chances are if you've been looking for a job during the pandemic, you've watched a video from my guest today. Known as the self-made millennial, she has helped millions refocus, recharge, and enter the next chapter of their lives. With over 4 million people leaving the workforce in the United States in recent months, and many reevaluating their work-life balance, what are some ways that you can take advantage of the market and find the best job ever? Here to help us today navigate these waters, please welcome to the program the self-made millennial, Madeline Mann. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Troy. Happy to be here.
So let's just start from the top. What are some of the trends that you're seeing right now, especially for young people, millennials like us and Gen Z?
So what I've been seeing is there is really this need for so many newer skills in the market, such as when you look at a lot of the jobs that are popping up, there's some jobs that it's impossible to have 20 years experience, like social media. We're seeing now for the first time having social media VPs and stuff, and lots of needs for everyone to be learning these new skills that maybe colleges, universities haven't taught people. And so a lot of people are going into these boot camps or really learning skills on their own. And so that's a really interesting advantage I've seen, to where it actually is evening the playing field a little bit between people who are more experienced and also people who are entering the workforce.
That's fascinating, because it seems that the labor force, and what employers are expecting is moving faster than kind of the old guard education system. I've seen a lot of courses, whether that's through Coursera or other startups, where they are teaching, like you said, these boot camps for coding and tech skills. What are some of those skills that you mentioned that the education system, at least right now in general, isn't moving fast enough for employers in teaching?
Absolutely. There's some really interesting skills, obviously, in the tech space, in data science, in all these different coding languages. But then there's also really important skills like copywriting, like all these different digital marketing strategies that are moving a mile a minute. Project management is one that I'm seeing pop up with so many different companies. And so really, you know, utilizing these skills. And also, like, I think that one thing I'm noticing is that the phrase, you know, 20 plus years experience in digital marketing or marketing, it's an empty phrase unless you've been leveling up every single year. And I think we're seeing that across so many different professions due to the speed of innovation.
You say that people, and I love this, it appears in a lot of your content, that people need to soul search before the job search. But how long should that period of soul searching be with so many openings out there? You almost have to strike while the iron is hot. So how do you balance the soul searching with the job search in this environment?
One of the things people think often is that you need to take a job in order to know if you would like that job. And that simply isn't true. What's most important when you're soul searching before you job search is that you are speaking to as many people as possible and getting a realistic understanding of what their career actually looks like. So that means doing informational interviews, asking them the nitty-gritty questions about the worst parts of their jobs, also the best parts, and how long it took them to get where they are and what skills they needed to get there. And the thing is if before you do this, you understand your values, what you care about in a role, maybe you really like to do teamwork. Maybe you really require that you should be able to get home to have dinner with your family every night, which a lot of professions don't really allow you to do that more nights than not. If you really understand what you actually want in your next role, at least the values basis, it'll pop up when you're having these conversations. Someone will say something like, you know, oh, I wasn't able to work my way up until I got to know the right people. And you really believe in more of a meritocracy, and you want to be able to be in an industry where you work up based on your merit, then you're going to say, okay, wait, that's not the type of company for me. So really just making sure you're being proactive about those conversations, because the long way is the short way. It really is where if you are able to figure out what roles you can have mastery in and really enjoy and place to your values, then your career is going to be on a way higher trajectory than you making lateral moves throughout your career trying to find the right match.
Really interesting. We've seen so many people leave the workforce, as I mentioned at the top. Is the boom almost over? What effect do you think, as we've seen the Delta wave, now we have the Omicron wave, almost bringing us back to, in some ways, 2020, not exactly, we have vaccines, but we have shutdowns coming back and schools going remote, at least for a couple of weeks in January. What effect do you think that could have on this really employee-centered boom?
I would say it's really interesting, especially for younger folks going into the workforce, because they have really faced the situation where typically when you are a more junior level employee, you get to go into the office and shadow people and see the way things are. But now so many of these, you know, internships and jobs folks are taking out of school and during school, they're all remote, which I think presents two different things. First is it is a negative in that you don't get that in-person experience. You don't get those networking experiences. The positive is that you could work for amazing companies that for the first time are opening internships to everyone in the country. And so as long as you are mining these opportunities and you are potentially even reaching out to companies and offering your expertise, I think there's the amount of opportunity, if you are looking for it and seeking it out, you can actually have so much more of a specific opportunity that you're grasping versus if you were locked to a certain location.
Right. And I think we saw maybe a couple days ago, maybe last week, Apple saying, hey, we're going to continue this remote work, hybrid work situation for a little bit longer. And employers keep stretching that date out to when they want to bring their people back into the office. And we don't know when they will and if they ever will. Another thing that I've seen too that some experts have mentioned is, well, before you leave a job, you should speak with your boss or the higher ups and kind of redesign the job, maybe cut back on hours or include more work from home options. When you're having that internal discussion, when do you know that that's the right alternative to take rather than leaving the employer entirely?
I love that advice. And it's never an ultimatum. It should always be a win-win. So what you want to do is never say, hey, you know, yeah, I'm working too many hours, like I need to go, or with this needs to change. You know, you never want to say something like that. Instead, you want to really have a conversation of, hey, you know, I'm noticing that I am really productive when I actually am doing like a 4-day work week. Like I'm able, and I'm like, would I be able to pilot a 4-day work week for 3 weeks and report back to my output? Things like that, where you're saying this is going to help the business. And so having those proactive conversations, always understanding it from the business perspective of whatever it is, right? If you want to get more money, asking what is the path to a raise, or if you feel like you've already made it there, really talk about not only the value you've already added, but how the salary is an investment and all the things you are looking to build for the company in the future, and you know how you have grown in this role to where your value has increased. And so I think if you're having these conversations and the employer is receptive, they don't necessarily have to already have a plan set for you. But if they're looking and willing to co-create this path for you and an evolving role that fits better with the lifestyle you're looking for, then I would say stay there. But it really always comes back to, all right, if there's certain non-negotiables and they are not meeting them, you know, that might be meaning that you might need to look at opportunities elsewhere.
And it seems like in this market that employers are more apt to consider that. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like they're wanting to retain as many of their employees as they can.
Absolutely, especially with these skilled professions. It really costs a company so much less to retain an employee than hire another one. So if they are truly savvy and strategic with their business, then yes, they will really work with the employee to make sure that it is a great situation all around.
One thing that I've been asked and had conversations with other millennials like myself and some members of Gen Z is they do exactly like what you said at the top. They go into a job and they realize, hey, this is not working out, but they're afraid to leave because it might look bad for a future employer if they've only been there 6 months or a year. So is there some sort of guide to know that, hey, do I have to stay a year? Can I leave after 6 months or a few months? How do employers look at that?
Troy, that's such a good question. And really what employers look for are patterns. Patterns can be anything. Patterns are often achiever patterns. So patterns of constantly getting promoted, constantly, you know, doing well in school and then having, you know, great jobs where, you know, you're consistently recognized, all those things. But they also look for patterns of job hopping and picking a job and then leaving immediately, either because you were unsuccessful in that job or you got bored quickly or you were constantly looking for the next thing. And I have been in hundreds, maybe even of thousands of interview debriefs at this point, and hiring managers are very nervous if they see the pattern of job hopping. And I would say job hopping, it really depends on the industry. But if you're at jobs for under a year that are not short-term jobs, like they were meant to be full-time several times in a row, that will send up a red flag. Why? Because employers are extremely risk-averse. They really want someone who, if they're going to invest all of this time and money into training them, ramping them up, that they don't want this person to leave very quickly. So I would say that it really, like, leaving a job soon after you take it is not a bad thing. And I think in our lives, we need to listen to ourselves, and it's okay to have what I call an oopsie job where you hop in, you're like, okay, this isn't it. But really do your work to make sure you're soul searching before you're job searching, and understanding if that company's right for you before taking the role. One of my best tips that I have personally done for every job, and my clients do it as well, is calling former employees of the company and chatting with them. Of course, you know, you ask them first if you can talk with them, but it's amazing how many of them will share what it was like to work there. And that can really give you a very clear signal of whether or not you want to take that job.
That's incredible, because I know that there are so many people out there who heard that and are like, they're breathing a sigh of relief, because they feel really this internal guilt that they may have failed at something, especially right out of school, right out of college, right? They feel like, oh, well, everything is supposed to work out now. And sometimes it just doesn't. And that's okay. Oopsie job. I love that.
Yeah, Troy. And I would say that if you are someone who is just out of college, having several short stint jobs is very normal. It's more when you get into the stride of your career that if you're continuing to have the short stint jobs that are not already considered freelance or contractor, then that's the red flag.
Got it. So we've made that decision, right? We're going down the pipeline here. You have decided to leave. The job person, job seeker has decided to leave their current employer. What if your qualifications don't exactly align with a position? I know you can't be a freaking brain surgeon with no education. I'm not saying that. But if you're missing one or two things that the employer is looking for, should you still submit that application anyway?
A job description is a wish list. And often that wish list is really long, especially at the beginning of a hiring process. A hiring manager will write down this unicorn person onto a job description of they have every single different skill, and they put it out there, and the hiring team comes back to them and says, look, I don't think this person exists. Or if they do, there's about three of them in the world, especially at the salary you're willing to pay. And so that knowing that, if you are saying, oh man, I only match 80% of these things, I can't apply, then you're definitely missing out, because there's lots of other people, likely the person who they hire won't have 100% of what's on the job description. So it's super important to go for it, but then also know that you can build those skills in one way or another. A lot of times we have to get a bit creative or really illustrate how, while we may not have done the exact thing on the job description, we did something that has a lot of transferable skills. And it's really your responsibility to make that translation to the hiring manager. And I'll tell you a secret. The hiring manager wants you to get the job. They want you to convince them that you have everything, because they want to stop the dang hiring process. They want it to be over. And so really making sure that you are doing that, you're doing yourself or working with a coach who can really help you find the glory in your story.
I absolutely love that. I love that. I've never thought of it that way. You almost go into a job interview in an adversarial combative mode. You're wondering, what are they going to ask me? What am I missing? You're going in with all of these questions in your head and not realizing that the hiring manager, the interviewer, has the same objective. They want to fill the position too.
Exactly. They walk into that interview thinking, please, Troy, be the answer to all my problems. Let me stop this interview process right after this interview. That's all I want.
Wow. There's been some stories I've seen out there as well that some people aren't even getting to the interview because they're hitting up against, I don't know what, digital filters of some sort that are screening out their applications before they even get to the hiring manager. How can we make sure that our applications are getting through that filter and into the right hands?
Yes, Troy, something has happened in the job application process in the past few decades, and that is the rise of online applications, which essentially means that it is nearly effortless to apply to a lot of these companies. I posted a job on LinkedIn the other day, and there's an easy apply button where it takes seconds, just click, and people can just go through and click, 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 which is why, you know, these application systems are completely overrun with not only applicants, but completely unrelated and unqualified applications. I've read just too many resumes to even imagine. And there's just so much noise from people who just do all these easy applies. So the issue is that the people who are wonderfully qualified, like your listeners, they're not being seen. And so actually these things that help to scan the resumes, these aspects of the applicant tracking system, can actually be helpful in that way to hopefully the people who are actually qualified are getting seen. Now, I know it can be really frustrating to some people because they think, what is the deal? Why is my resume being, filed away? But really, what's so important is to first measure your job search by interactions and not applications. So instead of trying to beat these applicant tracking systems, make sure that you're building relationships instead. So that is the most important part. But then if you're really trying to, you know, simply apply online and hope that it gets through, you just really want to make sure that you're using the job description as your total guide. I think too many people build their resumes based off of what they've done and not based off of the role they're pursuing. And that might sound a bit subtle, but it really is the complete difference between making your resume a Wikipedia page of everything you've done versus making your resume a sales page of exactly why you're the perfect person for this next role.
And that means a lot of extra work crafting resumes for each application you send in.
Right. You don't want to send a generic same application to every single role unless they are very, very similar.
You are listening to Madeline Mann, who is the self-made millennial, who is also a job coaching expert with over 8 million views on YouTube. We're talking about how you can take advantage of this very hot employee-centric market as you transition into the next year, 2022. Let's continue here. They say, as you've mentioned, that it's about building relationships, that it's not what you know, but it's who you know. What if you don't have those connections? You mentioned reaching out and setting up those meetings. Are people really open to accepting those meetings? You know, just those informational meetings, as you called them. How can you break in if you don't have connections?
Troy, it's amazing how open people are to this. And I'm not saying that they're open in that you're going to send 5 messages and get 5 replies back. No, you might get 1 reply back, but people love to talk about themselves. That's one thing that we all know. And so when you're doing these informational interviews, it's really an opportunity for them to talk about themselves and feel good like they're helping someone else, which is a double whammy that people love. But the key here is if you're going to ask for 15 minutes of their time, make sure you've spent 15 minutes of your time understanding them. So too often people will send generic emails. Hi, you have interesting experience. Can we speak on the phone? Or hi, Troy, here's my resume. What roles are open at your company that I could work for? Again, you're just putting there's no customization. You're putting the work on the other person. Instead, it really should all be about taking time to get to know them. It can be a very quick, like, glance over their LinkedIn profile and a genuine connection. And it's amazing how much people will want to help.
That is so true. I've had a couple of those meetings myself over my career. Yeah, it's amazing when you really craft that message and make it personal, people will reach out and want to sit down and speak with you. You worked for HR in a major tech firm in the past, and you now host clients all across the country and help them place themselves in work, but also help employers find talent. What do both sides get wrong? What do employers get wrong the most? And what do applicants get wrong the most?
Troy, I coach companies on how to interview, and companies are terrible at interviewing. They go in and they say things like, oh, I'm going to go off of my gut. And then the questions they ask, they don't really understand what a good, bad, and okay answer looks like and how to match that to the job requirements. And so it's this big spaghetti mess of people going with these feelings that they have in the interview and imprecise data on whether or not this is the right person. And so it truly is a mess. And so what I would say then on the flip side is what job seekers get wrong is that they don't realize, or they kind of go along with the flow of these interviews that are already bad. And I'll give you an example of a lot of people will go into a job interview thinking, I am going to go into this interview and answer the questions they ask me to the best of my ability. Now, if you have the information that this interviewer is not good at interviewing, is that the best strategy? No, it's not. Instead, what you've got to do is you've got to go into the interview with the information you are set on making sure that person hears. So it's not that you're going to dodge their questions or avoid anything, but that you're going to work certain information into your answers, and you're going to take control of the interview in that way, which will end up leading to a much better result in the end, because you're actually giving the interviewer what they want and what they need, but they don't know how to ask for it and how to unearth it. So it's kind of up to you to make sure that you're going in with a game plan and so that they're getting the right information.
That is so true. So true. And again, so many aha moments that I haven't even thought about. And that's why you are the self-made millennial, which I want to talk about a little bit about, because you've built your career, not only as this coach, but you've kind of helped other people, millions of people across the country and the world, realize some of these tips through your YouTube channel. And so there are a lot of young people, millennials, Gen Z, who want to be Twitch streamers on TikTok, on YouTube. So talk about how you made that decision for yourself to say, you know what, not only am I going to coach, but I'm going to create this business for myself.
It really came from my absolute love of my career. So as a human resources professional, I did soul search before I job searched. I had a psychology degree. I didn't know what the heck you're supposed to do with that besides become a therapist. And so I really did a lot of work to figure out what my next career move was. And human resources, when I looked at my values, I looked at my strengths, and I looked at the market demand, that all lined up for me. And because I joined companies that also played to my values, I was energized every night that I came home from my job. And because I was seeing behind the scenes of all the hiring processes, really working extremely closely with all of the executives, I just really saw all the different patterns of what made people successful in their careers and in their job search. And I was breaking it down in a way that didn't exist on YouTube at that time, which was very tactical and action-oriented, to where everyone who got off from my video, they knew exactly the next steps they were going to take in the job search. And so it all came just organically. I liked video content. So I went for YouTube. And from there, I went on to LinkedIn. From there, I went on to TikTok. And it's just been an absolute pleasure. And I didn't monetize any of it for a couple of years until people were saying, Madeline, we want you. We want the deeper content. We want the transformational content. And so I started offering coaching programs and courses, and those have led to the most transformational success stories. And it's been the thrill of my life. And so I ultimately left my job, which is something I never thought I would do. I thought I would be in corporate forever because I really did feel great in those roles. But this was just a larger calling.
Right. And I think that is so true. The most successful people that I've seen become digital content providers is that it's an extension of who they are. And you said that it was just a natural progression, and the audience moved you to do what you do on the different platforms. But I also want to say this, that, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's the truth. Being a content producer is not for everyone. Some people are just not entertaining. I mean, face the facts. You are extremely entertaining and engaging, and you've built a huge audience. But I think we also have to be real for some people that maybe that's not, being on camera is not going to be the role for them. But what are some of the other ancillary jobs that surround you as you kind of build your business that maybe could be a pathway for some?
Oh, that's interesting. So the ancillary jobs around my business, are you thinking about like what are some of the roles that I hire for?
Correct. Or people that, you know, help produce your content. Is it just you who is producing, or do you have editors and other people who, again, they can't be you. You are unique. You have the personality, charisma to do what you do, but they can still be a part of your team and help you grow your business.
I love that. Yeah, it is super fun. It is super fun to be in this orbit and impact people, even if you're not the person in front of the camera. So yes, I have video editor. I have marketing folks who really help me to put together all of the, you know, social media campaigns and all these live shows that we do. I have someone who helps with the coaching side. So really helps manage clients and make sure that they have everything that they need to be successful in these coaching programs. And then of course there's, you know, graphic design and then also, you know, any kind of copywriting and all of that. So yeah, there's so many different elements that go into it. You see one YouTube video, it seems fine, it seems good, but there's so much behind the scenes that really makes it all come to fruition.
Well, Madeline, I cannot thank you so much for your time. Your answers here today have just helped so many people out there, all of our listeners. How can people get a hold of you? How can they watch more of what you do?
Absolutely. Find me on YouTube, youtube.com/selfmademillennial, selfmademillennial also on TikTok. And head over to madelinemann.com to get a lot of free resources, free email templates, all the stuff you need, as well as you can check out more information on coaching.
Well, thank you so much, Madeline, for being here.
Thank you.
Madeline Mann is the CEO and founder of Self Made Millennial. Until next time, bye, everybody.